This week on the show, the NFL season that was, the NBA trade deadline does not disappoint, and an American television institution. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It, Alex Barth, along with Alex Lebowitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. Lebowitz, they did it again. The Patriots are six-time Super Bowl champions. 2 for 3 now with this show. Who's got it better than us?
Nobody. Nobody does. It was that was a great game, I guess. They had control throughout, not high scoring, but a great defensive battle. And they just keep winning. It's like, when's it going to be over? Yeah, you just don't know.
Never.
They're just head and shoulders above any team in the NFL in regard to, you know, how they go into each season and how they've evolved. And I mean, I've been in awe of it for the past 4 seasons. At this point, it's just like, I don't know how to react.
And you talk about being in awe of it. I just feel like there's this pattern where they go right to the brink and everybody says it's over. And then they pull us back out, and then we all say, oh, we'll never doubt them again. And then within the next year, we're doubting them right after 28-3. Nobody was going to doubt them. And then we doubted them this year, early in the year, late in the year, we doubted them. You know, a team that lost their starting left tackle, their star running back, their star corner, their secret weapon wide receiver this offseason, all of it. And you know what's going to happen next year? We're going to doubt them again next year after saying we're not going to doubt them. After coming through, after losing all of that, it's going to be, oh, they lost their left tackle. They lost their defensive end. Tom Brady's another year older. They had to replace all their wide receivers. And they're going to prove us wrong again. And it's just, like, myself included in this, because I doubted them at times. You can check the tape. At what point, what do they have to do to finally get us to stop doubting them at this point? It's just insane.
Well, I think it gives me the impression that they're going to continue to be a top tier, top level, top three football team in the NFL until Brady and Belichick retires, because they keep moving that goalpost. This season, you finish the year 11-5, you lose back-to-back games in December, and you still manage to turn it around come January and February and win a Super Bowl. They've never done anything like that. And for me, that's why, maybe with the exception of 2001, their first Super Bowl, this is the most impressive we've seen. So it's hard to you know, try to judge when the end is going to come prior to when it actually does, when this team continues to you know, defy the odds.
And you kind of hit on it there. Not just did they turn it around in January and February, they completely reinvented themselves. Right, the identity we saw in this team was in the playoffs was not the team they were in the regular season, a power run team. They switched from man to zone in the Super Bowl, which is unheard of. And just, I mean, the way, like, you talk about a game plan coach and how valuable that is and how rare it is, and that's all true. But Bill Belichick, just, he takes that to another echelon. The way, and again, I keep using this term, I can't get away from it, the way they reinvented themselves to go out and win this title. And yes, the Super Bowl itself, the game in Atlanta, not the most impressive performance, not the prettiest performance. But what people forget, and I get a lot of heat for saying this, and I don't mean this in this context to say defending Tom Brady, although I've used this to defend Tom Brady. Take this for what it is on the surface. Winning a Super Bowl is not about winning one game. You don't get that trophy because you won one game. You get that trophy for what you did over the course of the year, and certainly not their most impressive Super Bowl game performance. I don't. This may be their least impressive Super Bowl game performance in a win, if we're being honest. They did not blow me away against the Rams. But when you look at who they had to go through in the playoffs, what they had to endure in the regular season, this may be, like you just said, their most impressive trophy. I think it was certainly the toughest collection of playoff teams they had to beat. It was a new kind of adversity they had to overcome during the regular season. That trophy doesn't represent the 13-3 win over the Rams. It represents the entire 2018 team. And to me, that body of work may be the most impressive. Certainly from Belichick it is. I think it was the most impressive coaching job we've seen from Belichick in his time. And just what they had to overcome, both their opponents and some of the off-the-field stuff, it needs to be looked at in that context. I don't want to hear that this wasn't an impressive Super Bowl because the game was not impressive. Nobody's saying the game wasn't impressive. It wasn't. All right. I mean, some of what they did game plan wise was, but 13-3, maybe their least dramatic Super Bowl outside of the one against the Eagles the first time. But it's about what they did this season to me that stands out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it kind of, this year kind of, you know, encapsulates what we've seen during this era. And I apologize for continuing to go big picture, but you look at Belichick, you look at Brady, and the one thing that they've done better than anyone in NFL history, and this to me is indisputable, is, again, evolve and try to change. And I think we saw it all season long, or at least towards the end of the season. They were trying out different things, whether it was that amoeba defense, whether it was trying to get the run game going more often. And it's kind of just a microcosm for what we've seen since 2001. So to see them finish the year as a top team, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Wasn't the most impressive game in the Super Bowl, but it's kind of what you expect. Just enough to win. Enough to outplay whoever they're going up against, and enough to just be, the best team at the end of the season, almost by default, from exposing whatever the weakness is of whoever they're playing. And I still do think that was an impressive victory in that Super Bowl.
Oh, no, absolutely. Not to take anything away from the victory. Bill Belichick did an excellent coaching job, but, I mean, just you know, it was not the most entertaining football game.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But the defense was unbelievable. You look at a guy like Dante Hightower, who got better as the season went on. And
perhaps, just real quick, the best Patriots defensive performance in the Belichick era, at least
in the Super Bowl.
Bowl for sure. I think maybe in the playoffs altogether. I mean, you go back to some of those early Manning games, but 3 points against that offense. Brandon Cooks does nothing. Todd Gurley does nothing.
And something that people aren't talking about, Patrick Chung broke his arm.
Right. Patriots 3-0 in Super Bowls when safety breaks his arm, by the way.
Is that right?
Yeah. Wow. Well, Rodney Harrison against the Panthers.
Yep.
And he came back and played in that game.
Yeah, savage.
With the broken arm, although it was only one play. And then Eugene Wilson broke his on one of the last plays. Like, there was no time for him to come back. He broke his arm by the time the game was over in one of them, too. So safety breaks an arm in the Super Bowl. Patriots are 3-0.
But
I'm just saying.
So we got to start breaking arms if we're down in a Super Bowl.
Just have a designated arm breaking safety on the roster going into each Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a great plan. It might be against the CBA, but who knows? But
all about taking one for the team with the Patriots. You do what the team needs you to do.
Selflessness.
If that means break your arm, and to be fair, I don't want it to come across like making fun of Patrick Chung, leader of this team. I mean, he didn't want it. The card, he walked off like nothing gets Patrick. Just a funny. Not funny, but, you know, even Belichick said it's not funny, but, a coincidence that this keeps happening to them. Huge and they keep overcoming it in the Super Bowl.
But the thing with Chung is, you heard it during the broadcast, he's very vocal on that defense.
Right.
And the fact that he, left the game with that injury and they were still able to communicate effectively and to play well. Obviously, that Jason McCourty chasing down Brandon Cook, although maybe he was out of position. But him doing that, they just made plays when they had to.
Right.
And that's just a sign of a gutsy, just great defense. Maybe they don't have the talent. Maybe Kyle Van Noy isn't that Pro Bowl, All-Pro linebacker.
Well, don't say that because he'll come after you. He'll come on this show and come after you.
I love Kyle Van Noy. I think how can you not if you're a Patriots fan? But they just played very well when it mattered. They showed up when it mattered. Adrian Claiborne had a great game. The entire defensive front. So the fact that guys stepped up when someone goes down, the fact that they just played consistently and effectively, and they stuck to that game plan and got in Goff's head, it was just such an impressive victory, in my opinion. Even if it was low scoring, the defensive effort alone made that win very delicious.
And then, with some time left here in the segment, obviously an incredible accomplishment for the Patriots, but to end this year on that game, right? The year where there are more touchdowns scored by any other offensive records falling left and right. We saw Patrick Mahomes put up one of the greatest seasons a quarterback ever has to end on that game. Not necessarily the fitting ending for this season, but what was certainly one of the more memorable and every season is memorable because you only get one a year, but with all the storylines and everything, just a fun NFL season we had this year, really, it stood out to me.
Yeah, I'd say I'd say this along with the first Super Bowl they won against the Rams and the Falcons coming back in that game. Not only that, but the fact that you had Deflategate on the heels of that victory. Those are probably the top three in my opinion. This one, without a doubt, is as impressive as any.
Not even just Patriots, but I'm just saying, like, from the NFL season point of view, like,
oh sure,
the games we got this year. I mean, there were numerous games. Go back to Patriots Chiefs in Week 5. At the time, that was the game of the year, right? Remember, they said that's not going to be topped, and I don't even know if that's on the top five games of the year by the time we finish the season.
And that's a game I actually missed, unfortunately. I rewatched it, but that was the same night as, I believe, game two of the ALCS.
Yes, it
so was. There was a lot going on that night in New England. But yeah, it was a crazy year. I mean, what else do you expect other than the Patriots being the lowest scoring Super Bowl in the season in which we had the most points scored?
Right.
It seems very Patriot-like.
It's what Bill Belichick does. He changes the NFL, and then when everybody adapts to his changes, he changes again.
It's very fitting.
People forget, Bill Belichick eliminated the fullback position. Wait until everybody else had eliminated it, then brought it back, and then tried to do the same thing with tight ends. Like, he's epic. It's amazing. It's fun to watch, and they need to name the coach. I know people say they should rename the Lombardi Trophy after him. No, Vince Lombardi was the first great coach. Like, I'll say that's fair. You don't.
It's iconic. People already know it.
You don't go renaming the Lombardi Trophy. That being said, the Coach of the Year award is not named after anybody right now, and they won't name it after somebody who's still active in the league. But when Belichick retires, that absolutely needs to be the Bill Belichick Coach of the Year award. And I'll tack one more on. Much like the NBA did with Bill Russell, that Super Bowl MVP trophy needs to be named after Tom Brady. I just think those two, you can't do it while they're active. I'm in no rush to get that done, but those two things need to be done. It'd be a travesty if they don't.
Sure. I mean, the winningest quarterback, winningest player of all time.
And just more MVPs than anybody, more Super Bowl MVPs than anybody else. That's,
of course, yeah.
But, you know, small critique for Roger, and if he's still the commissioner at that point, help us. But you want to talk about drama. Right, NFL season had a lot of drama. You want the peak drama, where the drama is actually better than the actual product going on. NBA trade deadline this week. We got a lot of thoughts. Those are on the other side. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Callin' It, powered by CLNS Media. I'm Alex Barth. I'm joined by Alex Lebowitz. The best day of the NBA season was this week. Maybe second best. Free agency opening is
July
up there.
July 1st, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I take that back. Second, although this kind of sets up July 1st, the trade deadline does. We'll get into that in a little bit. But there was a record number of players moved yesterday at the NBA trade deadline. I think I saw it was the second most teams involved. Things got wild. Everybody in the East but the Celtics seemed like made a move. All the contenders. Celtics, they did make a move. They opened up a roster spot. They traded Jabari Bird. But the biggest story to me, Lebowitz, and tell me if you agree or not, LeBron bitched and moaned all he wanted, but he did not get what he wanted. And that is a huge step for the NBA. That's GMs are finally not giving in to this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
You sound disappointed.
No, because I still think the players – Evan Lazar last week when we were on Radio Row, I think he kind of hit the nail on the head talking about how players in the NBA have so much power. When you have a guy like Kristaps Porzingis who can, you know, demand a trade and get his way, the power structure is not where it should be. And I'm all for players having some control and having some power. I don't want to come across as someone who's not for that. But to the extent that players have that in the NBA – it's a little bit ridiculous. It's a little bit ridiculous. So LeBron James, it's about time, I guess.
Right. It's a step. I mean, there wasn't going to be a major power shift randomly, but I really thought, oh, LeBron wants Davis. He's going to get Davis. The Lakers and Pelicans are going to be handcuffed into making that trade. And all the credit in the world to the Pelicans. They didn't cave. And I'm not just saying that as a Celtics fan. I'm saying it as somebody who watches the NBA, who, like you, is sick of seeing the players always get what they want. They didn't. No player got what they want in this situation. LeBron didn't. Davis didn't. All those other players on the Lakers now are in a weird spot, right? We saw Lonzo Ball's Instagram story about still being in L.A., and that's going to be a mess of an environment now. And I said this last year, and I jinxed it, but I'll say it again. LeBron James, not a lock for the playoffs this year. I said it.
Yeah, they're a game above 500 right now.
Is this team that, I mean, they're better, but are they that much better than that Cavs team from last year, which was atrocious?
No, I mean, they're definitely not good enough, especially in that conference, to make a challenge for the NBA finals. That's right. Just my opinion. I don't think they're beating those top three, four teams in that conference. This is a in between year for LeBron James. And the fact that he didn't get Anthony Davis so that he could fight for that title, it's great. It's awesome. I don't want LeBron James in the finals anymore. I want a little bit more parity, which is kind of hypocritical coming from a Patriots fan. I think it is sweet to see that this guy is not it didn't get his way for once. It's about time.
All right, let's talk about what happened in the East, because a lot going on in the East, notably the Raptors adding Marc Gasol. They get another big man. The Bucks trade a player I really like in Thon Maker, but maybe a little redundant for them. They end up with Nikola Mirotic and Markel Fultz, now no longer in Philly. He gets traded, so, you know, trust the process, am I right? I want to focus on those first two, though. All those other teams building up ahead of the Celtics. They trade Jabari Bird. They got an open roster spot. You know, maybe it's Enes Kanter. Maybe it's Marcin Gortat. It's all essentially more or less the same player. I mean, I'm a little worried. I am. The Celtics, we saw it last night. They can't rebound. They don't have that big bully in the interior that I think they need. I think they're disinterested in having that guy on the roster. But, you know, now with Marc Gasol, you're going to have to beat him along with the other great bigs they have in Toronto. I think the Celtics do need to go get that guy. I don't know if this team right now can win a 7-game series against some of these other Eastern Conference top contenders.
Yeah, I agree. At this point in the year, they have to do something. And the fact that they were kind of silent during the trade deadline, it makes me think that they're going to gear up to get Anthony Davis. Obviously, they've been in talks with the Pelicans right. over potential deals that might be had this offseason. But for this year, yeah, well, I don't understand why it doesn't hurt. Enes Kanter, didn't he get waived? You can pick him up.
Him and Gortat both got waived.
So you pick up one of those guys, it would help. I don't think it's going to make the world of difference. I think that the Celtics are kind of what they are at this point in the year. Obviously anything could help, and right. adding those pieces would be huge given the fact that they've kind of been soft, in the post. But I don't know. I'm not too confident in them right now. And I think even with those moves, it's the Raptors and maybe even the Bucks.
Yeah.
I just don't know if the Celtics can really challenge either of those teams come the playoffs.
I mean, Danny Ainge is taking a major risk. That's what it looks like to me right now. I mean, he held on to all his assets to make a run at Davis this summer, which is fine. But Davis isn't going to sign here if Kyrie leaves. And again, you still have no assurance Kyrie is staying. Ainge said on 98.5 this week that, you know, the Celtics and Kyrie, it's like they're engaged. The paperwork's not signed. They can't say they're married yet, but he talked to Kyrie after the explosive comments. He feels confident that Kyrie is staying. And if Kyrie's going to stay, and you can go and you can make that trade and give up anybody you want but Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis and get him and lock him up, then this deadline's going to look brilliant for Danny Ainge, because he did enough to convince the Pelicans not to move Davis to the Lakers, and he didn't part with any major assets. And if you have to sacrifice this year to get a guy like Anthony Davis, I wouldn't say that for any other player in the league, to get Anthony Davis, then this is a good deadline. But to me, he's just taking a major risk here, because that's a lot of dominoes you need to fall. You need Kyrie to stay. You need to have the package to get Davis. You need Davis to want to sign an extension. That's a lot. And again, you have to be able to get Davis, I think, without giving up Tatum. I don't part ways with Tatum with Tatum to get Anthony Davis, because those two guys' ceilings to me, I mean, Davis is at a ceiling right now. Tatum's got a ways to go. But Tatum at a ceiling to me is about Anthony Davis. Give me the guy that's already in the system. But all that being said, I like the risks that Danny Ainge is taking. But that means next year, if you have Davis, and if your starting five is Davis, Kyrie, Tatum, Hayward, and Horford, I mean, all out. No more. Oh, they're still building. You know, they're still.
No, that's it.
Once you get Davis, go.
And I think that's the thing. We opened the segment talking about LeBron James not getting his way. That's one way to look at it. I think you just hit the nail on the head. The right way to look at it from a Celtics fan perspective is Danny Ainge convinced the Pelicans GM to not make a move. That it might be worth
really got his way.
Yeah, it's to not make his to you know hold out to try to maximize his profits on this deal. You mentioned Tatum in that starting five. I think if they do go after an Anthony Davis, Tatum's gone. I mean, that seems inevitable.
That's got to be like just about it. I'm not giving up much more. I mean, Tatum.
I mean, a pick or two. First,
right, but I'm not. You know, I'm not giving up Marcus Smart with Jason Tatum. I'm not giving up.
Maybe Rozier.
First. Oh yeah, you know how I feel about Terry Rozier.
So yeah, Rozier and Tatum in a first.
Favor.
What was that?
Take Rozier. It's a favor. At that point, you know how I feel about it. Good player, not a fit.
It's also coming to the point where you have to pick and choose who you want to keep. So I think it's a necessity to offload multiple players rather than just get rid of a Jason Tatum. Horford's contract's going to be up in a couple of years, and so you won't have to deal with that financial burden. But get rid of Tatum. Get rid of Rozier. When Horford's contract's up, maybe obviously you can re-sign him and it won't be a max deal. Yeah. But we'll have to wait and see on that front. But it's a great sign that Danny Ainge was able to get into his ear and say, hold up, wait. And I think it's sweet to see, you know, Anthony Davis, a guy who, you know, deserves power, but he's going to have to stay there in New Orleans for the remainder of the season and have to wait out his fate to see where he goes. I'm just concerned on whether or not he signs back, and I'm concerned on whether or not keeping this core together, the Celtics core together, and not making a move during the trade deadline will maybe erode the team chemistry and hinder the Celtics' chances of re-signing a guy like Kyrie Irving in the offseason.
And then finally, Markelle Fultz, like I mentioned, traded for essentially nothing. So the Celtics got Jason Tatum and what's probably going to be a lottery pick in Sacramento's pick this year for Philly gave that up. For what was the key piece? Jonathan Simmons?
Yeah, Jonathan Simmons and a couple picks.
Some guy whose only accolade was being all third team defense in the G League. So, I mean,
something to scoff at.
How about that process, right? How about that? I mean, why are people still taking the Sixers seriously? Their point guard's a power forward who can't shoot. Their top pick, who was supposed to be the final piece in the puzzle, is now gone for nothing. Embiid's legit, but he can't stay healthy. And then what else, right? I don't understand why people continue to take this team seriously. The Sixers are like the Ben Simmons of NBA teams. Everybody takes them seriously. I get why on the surface, but if you really look at it, there's no reason to.
Yeah, I think, obviously trading up to get Markelle Fultz was a huge blunder. I mean, that's the one thing you have to fault them for. The fact that you had Jason Tatum, a guy who Danny Ainge could tell was the future right there for the taking. And you decided not to go that route. I mean, just brutal move. I saw on Twitter, I got an argument with someone about, you know, this is the Sixers' fault for rushing Markelle Fultz back. If you're still under the impression that Markelle Fultz, his injury was entirely physical and that his mentality and, you know, how he handled the transition played no role in that, I don't know what to tell you. This is a team that took a really long time to get both Simmons and Embiid on the court. I think they took too long of a time. At least they could have gotten them back on the court sooner than they did. This guy was just a bust, simply put. He was traded. The number one pick from a couple of years ago has already been traded to Orlando for, you know, pennies on the dollar. And it's sad. You don't want to see a guy have a career or start to their career like Markelle Fultz has. But I think you're right. It does kind of – the bigger picture is, you know, this process has not gone that smoothly. It's not what the Celtics did. It's not what the Golden State Warriors did in drafting their pieces a while back. It's been, you know, mostly a failure so far with the exception of a guy like Joel Embiid.
All right, yeah, so we'll have to see how some of these moves play out again. It all kind of sets up for what's going to happen July 1st, who is Woj going to tweet out, has acquired Anthony Davis. That's now ultimately – the Celtics aren't winning a title this year. I think we've all come to terms with that. So now we all just wait and see what happens on July 1st. Lebowitz, you got a TV show coming out you might be looking forward to, correct?
Hell yes.
Not you have a TV show, but there is a TV show. What show is he talking about and what others could follow? We'll let you know on the other side. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Callin' It. Alex Barth along with Alex Lebowitz, powered by CLNS Media. To follow the show, you are no stranger to the fact that we are both big fans of Saturday Night Live. It has seen better days. This season has been good, not great. Certainly not their worst work, not their best. I don't know if you agree with that or not, Lebowitz.
The season of SNL?
Yeah.
Hey, I don't watch SNL, really. I'll watch their videos that go viral.
Wait, so then hang on.
Current day SNL, I do not watch. Let me do that caveat.
Okay, fine.
Not watching the SNL with, you know, I don't even know who's there. I like Pete Davidson. I like people on SNL. I just don't want, you know what? I'm not to get political. I think it's gone overly political and I want a distraction from all the chaos. I already talk about it every day in radio. And my comedy, I wanted to be as apolitical as possible. So I just, you know, and a lot of the sketches are just hit or miss. So, and there's also this thing where the SNL of your childhood, that cast of your childhood is the one that you always love. And anything after that is just really dull. And there's always going to be a generational bias. So I'll add that caveat before we get into the second.
No. And that's fair. Cause kind of what I was going to say is like, it's been good this year. And Pete Davidson's great. I think we both agree on that. But, you know, for me, peak SNL, at least for what I saw, looking at Bill Hader, Andy Samberg, Will Forte, Kristen Wiig, Fred Armisen, like that's my cast, right? Abby Elliott, and one of Will Forte's of many notable sketches was MacGruber, which is a take on MacGyver, which is a show from the 80s, yes?
Yeah, definitely in 80s. I mean, that mold doesn't give it away.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's a good call. But anyway, they had a couple good skits with that. It then turned into a movie, and now I guess it's going to be a TV show. And I never saw the MacGyver movie. I didn't hear great things about it. The sketches were funny, but
the MacGruber movie.
MacGruber.
But, well, let me just say this before we. Yeah. The MacGruber movie is one of my top three most laugh out loud funny movies I've ever seen.
Okay, I say I gotta watch it now.
So you gotta watch it. Will Forte is one of the most ridiculous people in the world.
Yes.
I love Will Forte. His work on Tim and Eric, his work on SNL, his work in MacGruber. Pretty much any movie he's in, he plays a hilarious character. I love Will Forte.
Underratedly hilarious in How I Met Your Mother.
You know, I'm not a How I Met Your Mother guy.
Disappointing. But for those of you who watch How I Met Your Mother, Will Forte's character is great. He's this guy who Barney tries to teach how to pick up chicks, but every time he gets nervous or turned on, he gets a nosebleed. And it's a very I'll send you clips. It's a very Will Forte character.
That sounds like a Will Forte character if I ever heard one.
Yeah. So and look, like, again, I didn't see the movie. I'll check it out. But if you have Will Forte, Maya Rudolph, who else is it?
Will Forte, Maya Rudolph. There's Kristen Wiig is in it as well.
Like getting those people back together on television, I'm all for.
Oh, they're great.
Like, I'd imagine it will be good, but then it begs the question. You know, some SNL skits do get turned into movies, but what SNL skits really should have been a TV show? And I've said this for years. Stefan, right? Bill Hader, you know, say what you will about Forte, was great. Bill Hader is the best character SNL actor in terms of creating and diving into a character. Bill Hader is the best at that in SNL that I've seen because he had such ridiculous range in doing that.
I think he's one of the best impressionists. Yep. I've seen,
but not even impressionist. The original characters were also epic.
Oh, he's I'd say he's a top 10 SNL cast member all the time. I think that's definitely safe to say.
So Stefan, which written by and I'm blanking out his name.
John Mulaney.
Big Mouth. John Mulaney. Thank you. Written by John Mulaney, one of the funniest people on the planet. That absolutely should have been its own TV show. 100%. Somehow they should have figured out a way to get Stefan his own TV show because that was and will forever be. I know it's not its own skit, but the funniest SNL segment for me growing up. Every time it came on, you know, sit right in front of the TV, everybody quiet, just rolling around on the floor laughing.
That's a good one. I don't know if that would translate to a TV show as well. When I look at TV shows or sketches that could have been TV shows, I want two characters that are in those sketches. And I think the best duo
there
are...
There were other characters. It was all the people he mentioned.
Seth Meyers was big in that, for sure.
No, not just Seth, but all the stuff like... I'm trying to – like the goofy people he made up.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a midget dressed as a dentist outside. Like he did like obscure references.
Exactly. Like
yes. You could actually personify those references.
DJ that would be fun. Joy.
Yes. That'd be a lot of fun. I look at two guys, though, who were a great tandem on SNL, Chris Farley and Adam Sandler. And they had a couple sketches that were hysterical. One that I love that I think doesn't get enough love is the Herlihy Boy. That's the one with Adam Sandler. He has this blonde wig on. He's this timid teenage boy. And then there's Chris Farley, who's like a guy who's trying to hype him up. It progresses. It's a kid who wants to house sit for you. And progresses from like...
I do remember that.
Let me water your plants, please. Let the damn boy water your plants. And it's really funny. And then it escalates to, please let me live with you. It's a boy. It escalates to that. It could have been funny to see maybe a little bit more with those two characters. Also, the one where they play an old couple, Chris Farley is the wife.
Great.
And Adam Sandler is the husband who wants to kill himself.
Yeah.
That could have been hilarious. We mentioned this prior to recording this, Matt Foley.
I mean, Matt Foley, like that was, you have an inspirational speaker who just has this horrible, awful life.
Yes.
And he
makes money by going to specific houses and trying to talk some sense into the youth, even though he does, he has a horrible life and it's kind of a cautionary tale in reality.
So I just thought of another one that would have been good. And I think it actually started as a sketch on a different show that got carried over to SNL. And it's a little earlier. It's Mike Myers. And the most notable one is Mike Myers, Madonna, and what's her name? The lady who said she took sleeping pills and it made her tweet something racist.
Roseanne Barr.
Right. Linda Richmond's Coffee Talk. I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Coffee Talk, that one.
Coffee Talk.
Yeah,
I'm getting verklempt. I'm getting a little verklempt. Barbara is here. I mean, maybe that's just me having a Jewish grandmother from New York.
Yes.
But, I mean, that sketch was – I remember the first time I saw that, I had never even watched SNL. I just saw it as a video on YouTube that my brother showed me, and I was dying.
And those are really funny. And there's a lot of sketches that they did that were talk shows. Like another Chris Farley one is he actually plays himself, and he interviews like Bruce Willis, and he's just like, remember that scene where you walked on?
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like saying, remember this stuff? And then he just goes, yeah, that was cool. he starts abusing himself.
That you can't get 22 minutes out of that. I think you could have gotten 22 minutes out of Coffee Talk with Linda Richman.
And then there's Myers. That would be good. The Church Lady with Dana Carvey.
Church Lady's also a classic,
great one. And then there was one more that I am now blanking.
The Joe Pesci Show.
The Joe Pesci Show with Jim Brewer.
Yeah.
Jim Brewer's hilarious. Another great impressionist. But those are all hilarious ones. Another one that I think was funny, and these are all just like, for me, if you were to create a show about it, it'd be diving deeper into the character in that sketch rather than the sketch itself. The Chippendales one with Patrick Swayze and Chris Farley. Chris Farley, I just love, if you could not tell.
Yeah, no,
and
Chris
I think
Farley's an all-time great.
There are a lot of characters he did that it's like, I want to know what that person's like. Outside of this sketch, I want to see more of this guy.
Just want a TV show about Chris Farley's life is kind of what this sounds like.
I want a deeper dive into the characters he plays. And I think that's the same thing as what you want for Stefan, a deeper dive into his character and the characters that
More of those ridiculous references. Just like pulls two things together. I'm trying to remember. There's one with a rabbi that's just hilarious.
there's too many to even mention for that one. It's like Stefan was incredible. Those are kind of the big ones for me. I Chris Farley is a guy who I think is one of the best cast members for SNL. Bill Hader, as you mentioned, Fred Armisen was absolutely incredible. And just a quick side note, if you're ever looking for some type of SNL type show that is not SNL, it's on Netflix.
Do not say Mad TV.
No, obviously not. Okay. There are a few sketches on Mad TV.
There's two funny sketches for Mad TV. And I'll
Stewart. That one's funny.
I don't even know. There's Let Me Get Your Number.
Okay, yeah.
Which is an all-time classic. And there's Sopranos sketch, which is Sopranos on basic cable.
Okay,
I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
I haven't seen that one.
So have you seen The Sopranos?
I haven't gone through it.
You have to watch The Sopranos to get it, but it's basically a clean version of The Sopranos. And first of all, the characters they have do a very good job impersonating The Sopranos characters. That's
they're a great cast. People don't realize Matt TV had a very good cast.
Excellent cast. By the way, I remember it was the Stefan one, a Jewish Dracula named Cindy Applebaum.
Yeah, I remember that.
But yeah, no. What show are you going to say? Sorry.
Documentary Now.
Oh, well, that's SNL. Isn't that Fred Armisen and Will Forte?
It's Fred Armisen, Bill Hader, and it's written by those two, and then Seth Meyers and John Mulaney.
Okay, so yeah, so that's
so it's SNL. The SNL Raiders, but it's not an SNL. It might be produced by SNL, by the people behind SNL, but it's not affiliated directly with SNL. But right. That's incredible. Mockumentaries are just always usually hilarious if in the right hands.
How I would have done the Matt Foley show. Living a van down by the river. You make that a mockumentary about his life. That's gold. Like, hypothetically, Chris Farley lived a little longer in a different universe. Mm. The perfect crossover would have been having Michael Scott in The Office hire Matt Foley to come speak to The Office.
That, yes.
Would that not have been the best crossover in television history?
That would have been great. I would have loved that one for sure. Wish we had more references to, like, the older ones. Obviously, Coneheads was made into a movie that was originally sketch on this.
Like before we watch, I mean, there's Cheeseburger, No Coke, Pepsi.
I don't remember that.
That was like the first big skit I think they did. I've gone back and tried to watch like the first season or two, and it's just so different, and it's tough to follow.
Well, that's the thing with comedy; it evolves, and what's funny back then isn't funny now. It's like when we have kids, the next generation. They're not going to find a lot of the stuff we find funny.
Right.
It's just not going to happen because, it's a different time. It's kind of the same argument. Jokes that could be told 20 years ago can't be told now. We've evolved in regard to what we're able to stomach as a public. Again, there's going to be a generational bias. And for me, although my generation for SNL is that, Bill Hader, Fred Armisen, Amy Poehler, Kristen Wiig, Seth Meyers cast. I really do love the 90s cast. Even though that was considered the worst cast at the time, they did not do well. I think
every cast is considered the worst. And I'll tell you what, the cast 20 years from now is going to look like crap compared to this cast.
I got another one for you.
All right, close it on this. It better be a good one.
The Dysfunctional Family, Will Ferrell.
Oh, I have a Dodge Stratus. Dodge Stratus!
That's a good one.
That is a legendary one.
That would be amazing. And Will Ferrell, someone we haven't mentioned yet. He had a lot of great sketches to the USA thong that he wore into a meeting.
It's a different sketch, but in theory you could link them if you're making a TV show. Brandon, Get on the Bag.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that could be right. That could be the same character. It's not in SNL, but like it wouldn't be that hard to write that and make that. There's a son, Brandon, who's not at the dinner. It would be very easy to make that the same character.
It's appeared we've misplaced your baby. The one where he's a doctor and he lost the baby. That one was hilarious. And it's always funny. I know they're not supposed to break, but obviously it's hilarious.
Well, Jimmy Fallon ruined every sketch ever he was ever in by breaking.
I like Jimmy Fallon. That
The Boston couple.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. Yeah.
No. Well,
Rachel Dratch is hysterical.
One of the most underrated SNL talents.
She's from, I believe, Somerville originally. Oh,
we talked about off the air. Debbie Downer. Been a movie, if not a TV show. Wah, all right. We could keep naming SNL sketches for a while, but we'll save that for another show. Next week, we'll talk basketball. We might talk hockey. We might talk baseball.
Truck Day was last week. This week, actually.
I kind of want to say this, though. Like, part of the reason I'm so hesitant to talk baseball is because we could talk about it, and then Manny Machado could sign an hour after we record the show, and it's all irrelevant. So I'm blaming Manny Machado and Bryce Harper for us not talking about baseball for a while because I'm waiting on them like we all are.
I think next week what we can discuss is how the MLB is in big trouble. The fact that you have a lot of these top-tier free agents yet to be signed. We saw it last year with J.D. Martinez being signed late into the offseason. I think it was a spring training he was signed.
Right.
And it's probably going to be the same with Harper and Machado this year. That's an issue.
So I want to talk about that. What's going to happen is we're going to talk about it next week, and then we're going to hop off the recording, and we're going to find out both of them signed.
It's the Colonna curse.
We'll still talk about it next week. So all of that, you can follow us on Twitter at Colonna Podcast, and check us out online at clmsmedia.com. For Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.